Hey marketers, if you want to get the latest news, trends, and insights in marketing, advertising, and tech, check out the Adweek Podcast Network. Learn from leading voices across media and marketing with original shows like Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, Marketing Vanguard, and Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle. Start listening now by searching Adweek wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You're listening to Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, a show where we discuss trends, marketing, pop culture, and the future of tech, because at the end of the day, everything is an ad. I'm Luz Corona, Adweek's community editor, and I am joined here by my brilliant co-host, Adweek brand editor for Europe, Rebecca Stewart. Bex, how are you?
Hey, Luz, I'm good. I feel like the Christmas countdown is on now.
Yes, it is in full gear now. But going back to the show, we have a special episode for listeners today, which is featuring a rundown of our next tech event and a session we recorded on stage. But before we get into our conversation, Rebecca and I have a few programming reminders for you. Check out our inaugural Champions of Change list, an evolution of our long-running Most Powerful Women in Sports franchise over on Adweek. Story on Angel Reese, written by Molly Cahillane. Check it out. On the Adweek Podcast Network, we have two new shows for you to check out. Tech Magic with Kathy Hackle and The Garage, Tools for Retail Media Innovation, presented by Albertsons Media Collective. Lastly, don't miss our final Adweek event of the year, Adweek X in LA on December 4th. The lineup recently added those guys from It's Always Sunny. You may have heard of them, Glenn Howerton and Rob McElhenney. And joining them will be industry leaders like Female Quotient, Shelly Zalis, Everett Taylor from Kickstarter, and the one and only Antonio Lucio.
That's going to be a great event. And elsewhere, back to podcasts. As a quick reminder, you can now listen to new episodes of Young Influentials hosted by Adweek's very own digital editor, Colin Daniels, every Tuesday on this feed. And if you haven't already subscribed to this podcast or want to learn more about all of the shows on the Adweek Podcast Network, you can do so at adweek.com/podcasts. And last but not least, follow us on social at Adweek across every platform. If you have any questions, suggestions, comments, or kind words, let Liz and I know and send us an email, podcast@adweek.com. Now, without further ado, let's jump into our conversation with our friends over on the Media Beat, Mark Stenberg, Catherine Perloff, and Trishla Otswal. Then we'll play and fill a session with BuzzFeed, hosted by Mark, from Next Tech Event.
Hello, Rebecca. How are you doing today? I'm excited for our conversation.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be a good one. We have an Adweek super band with us today.
Super band of misfits, but they're really, really smart and just a lot of fun to talk to. But yes, our media team friends are here. Kathy, you and I just came off the retail summit in Minneapolis a few weeks ago, and now we just had Next Tech, and I'm so curious to hear like your take, like what'd you think of the conversations, themes that came up, trends?
Yeah, I feel like these events are a really great opportunity to just sort of see like what is on the cutting edge of what marketers can be doing and how they're thinking about data and targeting. and media placement, but you know, it's often stuff that, you know, when you actually talk to marketers, they're not actually all doing. So it's an opportunity to sort of learn about that. I covered a couple interesting topics at these panels. I think, yeah, kind of on that, like, it's buzzy, but do people know about it? We talked about attention at Next Tech and what attention metrics are, which, little primer, is sort of how much attention people are paying to a particular media placement. They measure this sort of with eye tracking and other probability data. There's various tech vendors who do this, and it's a growing movement within advertising and measurement to look at media placements in this way. Not so much as a replacement of identity or how we sort of target the ads, but more so how do we pick where they go. And I spoke with Condé Nast and Media Hub, who have kind of were saying they use these tools partly because the existing solution, notably Viewability, to sort of figure out where is a good place to put your ad, the people will actually see it, has sort of been gamified and isn't as useful, especially for a premium media content owner like Condé Nast. Also kind of some interesting topics that came up was, you know, third-party cookie deprecation happening next year, though I think I read somewhere that we're kind of in purgatory because this has been sort of a looming threat over everyone's heads for so long, and then it like keeps getting pushed back. So like, what are people actually doing? So I talked to NBC about the fact that, yeah, actually some of their buyers are trying to buy more media via first party data and contextual signals. Which is surprising because NBCU is a mostly TV inventory. It's via IP address, which right now is not as threatened by regulatory pressures as cookies, but still buyers are using this partly because third-party data has always not been great and first-party data can sort of have more fidelity in buying. So those are some things. I mean, I guess last thing is that retail, I don't know if this is too long, but at retail, though, you mentioned the retail media summit. I think one interesting theme from that conversation was just like how everything is sort of becoming media. I talked to Intuit, which is you don't think is a media company. They're like a small business tech company, but they've got a lot of data on small business owners, and they can sell that data to advertisers who want to target ads to these people on various media properties. So yeah, I thought there was a lot of good conversations about sort of where media and ad buying are going, even if we're not quite there yet, I think, as an industry more widely.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Catherine. And a lot of the sessions I tuned into first party data did come up too. But I want to come to you next, Mark, because you were there with your kind of publisher reporter hat on. You cover all things publishers for Adweek. And you even managed to file an exclusive story while you were, you know, hosting, reporting, doing other things on the ground. Can you talk a little bit about the trends you've seen and talk about that story I referenced, which was about BuzzFeed?
Yeah, absolutely. The exclusive that came about was really kind of just a bit of serendipity to a degree. My first session was speaking with Jessica Probus, who is the Senior Vice President of Editorial at BuzzFeed. And she and I were there to discuss what I would say was probably the macro theme of the event, which was artificial intelligence. I know Trisha is probably going to touch on this a little bit too. My conversation with Jessica was mostly about how our publishers using Gen AI to create new products, and then a little bit more to the point, how are they monetizing them? How are they actually seeing commercial returns on this technology that up to this point has been really a lot of buzz? And so it was funny, I was actually talking with Jessica before we got on stage, and she kind of just let slip to me that after our session, she was headed back to the BuzzFeed office because they were about to have this big meeting where they were going to announce a massive strategic shift for the entire BuzzFeed portfolio. And as a result of that, she was actually going to be promoted to the role of publisher and the longtime publisher of BuzzFeed, a woman named Dao Nguyen, who had been in that position basically since the inception of the company, was stepping down. So it was a really big sort of symbolic shift, that kind of change in publisher. And then I kind of allude to this in the story, but a bit of a end of an era type moment where you basically have BuzzFeed announcing this shift away from more or less a scale era and trying to sell media based on here's the total aggregate number of impressions that we can offer you across our portfolio, and now starting to sell and operate more by brand, because they're different brands, whether it's BuzzFeed or Tasty or Complex or whatever, have different strengths and weaknesses, commercial orientations, and they basically were kind of admitting that trying to sell all those as one unified offering makes less sense nowadays, and they're going to try and lean into the differentiated elements of their editorial portfolio. So we didn't get into that on stage. I had to keep all that kind of under my hat while we were talking, which was very hard to do. But she and I had a great session. And then my other session was with a woman named Mary Mirko. She's the chief revenue officer at The Skim, which is a newsletter-based kind of news curation service specifically for millennial women, although they are trying to expand their audience a little bit. And that was an interesting conversation. It was really predicated on this larger concept of revenue diversification that the entire media industry has really taken in stride as, you know, the digital advertising market has kind of cratered a little bit. But The Skim is a really interesting example just because they basically went the first 10 years of their existence doing one thing. And then in the last year and a half, they've tacked on a bunch of new editorial products, a bunch of new commercial products, and are really trying to say, okay, if we can't necessarily grow our audience by some, you know, order of magnitude, how can we like double and triple and quadruple serve our existing really loyal readers? So we got a little bit into their commerce and their affiliate effort and how, to Catherine's point, how they're using data to try and really make that feedback system a little bit more intelligent. They've collected a bunch of great first party data over the course of a decade by having their readers interact via email that entire time. So now they're trying to take that data, harness it, and turn that into affiliate revenue by making really intelligent product recommendations. Mary on stage was talking a little bit about how they use that data to think in an anticipatory sense about trends that are coming up or seasons that are approaching or buying moments that are about to happen. We're speaking just a little bit before Black Friday. She was talking about how they're trying to be ahead of the curve with that and already be serving their readers potential buying needs before they even have thought about them themselves. So yeah, the big trends for me, and I would say probably for the conference in general, were definitely data and AI. And I got to touch on them a little bit in those conversations.
That's so cool, Mark. And I think just even those two publishers, I mean, they're like really solid case studies in general. We've seen BuzzFeed just go through a lot of changes in the past few years, even if we're not like fully immersed in the media space, we still seen like in the industry. And then The Skim, like we all know and love. So it's very interesting that they talked about revenue diversification because what started out as an e-newsletter, of course, they had to figure out how to evolve. My friend Trish, you were up on stage too. I was there for your session on for one of your sessions, and then I do know you were talking about bias and AI, and specifically you kind of cover a little bit more of the tech AI part of this beat. So can you tell us a little bit what you saw on your end at the event?
Yeah, I think, you know, because ever since generative AI came onto the forefront, there's been this farrago of how do we make sense of this technology? Yeah, it's the new shiny object in the ad land, but I think the reality of it is sort of like hitting marketers right now, and biases was one main problem. So I spoke with Pinterest on how they are addressing biases and why it's kind of imperative for marketers to take this seriously, because at the end of the day, it's going to impact their bottom line if they are, you know, they're going to kind of miss out on reaching a diverse audience across different regions, even perhaps. So that was a very interesting conversation, but I think Pinterest is also kind of getting more serious about generative AI efforts. Something they told me like off the stage was they are testing how do they kind of like incorporate this technology for ads with their ad partners, maybe something that they would come out with early next year. So yeah, there is like a slow but progressive movement. Still, biases is a main concern. And I think another key takeaway is for marketers on how do they sort of like navigate this mess is to test and play and kind of, you know, spend some time with these models to gain a comprehensive understanding of both their capabilities and their shortcomings. And I think this hands-on approach could benefit them to understand how they could use this tech for their marketing purposes. So that was in the AI front. I had another very interesting conversation on the privacy front with Papa John's and Headspace, both very different brands doing very different things. But I think, yeah, of course, like privacy is a paramount concern for marketers, especially as Kathy said, with the looming deadline on third-party cookies and how they're trying to reach new audiences. Interestingly, many marketers still seem hesitant to part ways with third-party cookies. I think the prevailing attitude is, oh, you know, we'll deal with this when Google actually turns it off, given their track record of delaying this deadline. However, I think some brands, case in point, Papa John's, who still uses third-party cookies, I think, to a single-digit percentage, are perhaps slightly better prepared. They said that they were heavy on linear CTV and online video and are focusing more on smaller, more meaningful and strategic partnerships by working with fewer DSPs. So yeah, that was the overall consensus from what I gathered. Interestingly, there have been some agencies, case in point, Supernatural and marketers. I think Unique is one such company who have been playing with generative AI way before it hit the market. So I think Unique has been working with OpenAI since 2020, 2021. So this gives these companies a leg up in how much more forward they are in the curve to have Gen AI products ready and to roll out into the marketing world. So lots of things happening. People are on different timelines. They're all on the same journey. I just guess one company's more ahead of the other.
Well, thanks so much, guys, for stopping by to chat through what we missed out on. And for those at home who missed out too, you can listen to Mark's session with BuzzFeed publisher Jessica Probus after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/generate to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/generate. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jess Probus, the Senior Vice President of BuzzFeed Editorial. Jess, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're kind of getting into everything AI, sort of in every session, taking a little bit of a different approach to it. This is definitely going to be, how does this impact the editorial world? And I was saying to Jess kind of backstage, I don't think there's a better publisher to have this conversation with, just because BuzzFeed does have such a track record of being a first adopter of new technology, taking it for a spin, seeing what works, what doesn't work. So on that note, BuzzFeed has already put out a few products that are Gen AI based. Could you walk the audience through what some of those are and sort of the different categories that they fall into?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're totally right that we sort of, for better and worse and later better, are really early adopters of things. I think really what that requires is going into something and seeing a new opportunity as an opportunity instead of a threat. And I think with AI, that was really important that we do. We actually launched our first generative AI editorial content in February 2021. So it was very early. It was this quiz where you could find your AI soulmate. It went viral on Twitter. It got like 2 million views back when you could get views on Twitter. And it was glitchy and weird. Like at that point, that was kind of the shtick with Gen AI, even just a couple years ago. Like it was intentionally weird. And that's something we try to lean into when we're experimenting with new things, to really sort of say, we're not taking this too seriously yet. We're trying to understand it. We're trying to do something different. We're trying to just understand the capabilities and what the audience reception is. So that was the first. And then it took a couple years, probably till about November 2022, for the outputs to get better and for us to really start to understand how to apply this to the things we're doing. So the first major initiative was that we launched a more official quiz product. So BuzzFeed quizzes, classic part of internet culture. We really haven't done anything to change that in a long time, but we added sort of the power of AI to make some of these quizzes have an infinite number of possible results. And that was really interesting. And the way that we really think about applying AI is that we want to be able to create things that we're calling it AI native, which means something that would not be possible without the AI technology. We're not trying to do things that we've done before and just replace the skills with AI. We're trying to do something that's totally new. So we had the quizzes. We also have launched a few, we're calling them games. They're sort of like a chatbot experience where you can play a game where there's sort of objectives, and some of them are super weird. There's one where you can compete to try to become an influencer. It's very hard, and the coach is kind of mean to you. you can get canceled in this game. And then we also have one that's called a Nepagachi, which is a Tamagotchi where you can raise a Nepo baby. So truly just trying things that are weird. We also have a few that are very utilitarian. So we have one that's called Botatui for our Tasty brand, which is a virtual sous chef that will help you search through all the recipes of the Tasty catalog and answer food questions for you. And then we also have just been using generative AI, whether it's images or text, in some of our other content creation. We had another area that was more visual. We've started using generative AI to create lists of different images. So we had one this summer that went viral in a few weird places where we did Barbie Dreamhouse. It was like, this is what Barbie Dreamhouse looks like in all 50 states. And that was a fun experiment that was big on TikTok.
I think I've done all of those, like not even professionally. I think I totally scrolled through the list to find like my home state and did the whole Barbie thing.
Yep.
I am curious though, on that note, what does the decision process look like in terms of, let's turn this concept into a Gen AI assisted piece of editorial, specifically with something like the Nepo Baby or the Barbie house concept? Is there criteria that a story has to meet for y'all to say, okay, it's worth the sort of outlay of investing those tech resources into turning this into a bot? Like what do those conversations look like?
Yeah. So we have, right now we have what we're calling sort of, I think everyone uses this term, but like a brain trust of people that are, across the business and tech and editorial side that are all working together to really spend more time to understand what all of the different opportunities are for AI in edit and in the biz side, and how we're going to apply the resources. I think for some things that are low lift, we have a lower bar. If it doesn't take a long time to do, we're willing to just try it and get it wrong and try again. For something like a chatbot game, that's one of the things that is really high lift. You have to create the game mechanics. You have to spend a lot of time on the prompt. You have to put a lot of voice, and there's design work. So for that, what we wanted to figure out is, what is something that is related to a conversation that people are already having? So we launched the Nepagachi when everyone was talking about Nepo babies. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to say, okay, how do we get an in on this conversation that's already happening and put a unique spin on it so that there's a more natural way for people to talk about it, and we don't have to just do marketing of everything? Because part of what we're trying to do for our audience is like introduce them to what AI does and is. And so we don't want to have to say, you know, here's this concept, here's what the tech is, here's the brand. We want to be able to introduce one thing at a time. And so it was getting in on something that was already part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that brain trust. I know this is like a little bit of like a organizational question, but I'm very curious, what size team is dedicated to these AI efforts? Is it a standalone group and that's their sole remit? Or is this just part of a larger tech division, and then occasionally they get tasked with building out some AI product?
Yes.
both.
It's both. We do have an ML team that works specifically on AI that's on tech and other types of machine learning. And then we have an editorial group that is more of our sort of R&D like innovation group that focuses more time on this. But we also give almost everyone, I think, on tech and editorial has access to some of the tools, whether they're external tools or ones that we've built, so that they can start to understand how to apply them to their own work in different ways, but also to participate in how we figure out what the next thing is going to be. So not everyone is required to do it, and it's not part of everyone's full-time job, but everyone has access, and we're trying to slowly get more and more people to adopt it.
Well, and speaking of next big thing, Botatouille, I thought, was a very interesting concept. Thanksgiving's right around the corner, so I'd imagine engagement might be beginning to climb up there. Could you talk a little bit about what that product is and how y'all came up with the idea? And then more specifically, I'm really interested in how do you measure success for a recipe bot?
Totally. Yeah, so Botatouille is our tasty sous chef bot. One of the things that is so interesting about Tasty and really some of our other products that I can talk more about later is Tasty is a social first brand, and it's been around for a long time. So there's a huge volume of recipes. We do have an app and a website, and people can go and search for the things that they want. But the volume of things you can search for is pretty massive. So having this bot to help you have not only like a more effective search experience, but a more fun search experience. That's really one of the things we bring to our lifestyle content in general at BuzzFeed, is that we want something to be not only useful, but also entertaining. So like, even if you come to Botatouille and you don't find a recipe you want, we want you to have like enjoyed the experience so that you'll come back again and maybe try it again. So that was really important. And then what was the second part of your question?
How do you measure success? What do the KPIs look like for something like that?
Yeah, and the thing that we're seeing is that the engagement on these AI products is what's so interesting and compelling. We see for Tasty, I think, we have about 50% of the people that are clicking through to a recipe, which is pretty high conversion for something like that. We also see a lot of the users, majority of users are coming back multiple times a month. Some of them are coming back multiple times a day. So it really is this loyalty funnel, I think, in a way that we're thinking about, the utilitarian ones in particular. But really we're measuring engagement, and then also trying to understand, okay, we know that once we get someone into these experiences that they're very highly engaged, but then what is the work we need to do to get them into the experience, to educate people about what this new weird thing is that's talking to you. Like, it's not just like the clippy ancestor that is going to bother you and give you things you don't need. We want to be able to position it in a way where people understand what they're going to get and be willing to go into it. So we're still doing a lot of iterations on like the presentation, the discoverability, the design, across Botatouille and everything else to really improve that. And we've seen that every time we do make some sort of change, the volume of people that get into the experience has definitely increased.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about monetization in a second. But before we get to that, I am curious, with something like Botatouille, how do you distinguish whether, I mean, for a user to be visiting it, do you see it primarily as, you know, like sharing, like a source of distribution, like this is a tool to get people to the website? Do you see it as a sort of standalone, you know, tool that can generate revenue? Or do you see it as like a brand builder, kind of like this is part of the BuzzFeed ethos of adopting new technology, and this bot sort of exemplifies that? What is something like this, you know, internally, how do y'all think about it?
I think for each of them, it's going to, each different product is going to be different. I think for Botatouille in particular, right now it primarily lives on the Tasty app. So you have to already be a Tasty user and get into the app to use it. And in that sense, it is more of a loyalty driver. It's a something that will help people come back more often, get more value from the content that we have. But there are a lot of interesting ways to use these, I think, as distribution channels. At this point, Meta will also allow you to integrate your bot into some of their messaging experiences. And even places like WhatsApp are starting to get more of those, where you can think about building an audience in a totally new way, where people are already used to having a conversation, but then using that to distribute new content. And that's something that we're building a little bit more, maybe not necessarily with just Tasty, but with any of our products.
Gotcha. And so when it does come to monetization, which I think is, you know, sort of, there's a lot of buzz around the concept, but in terms of what's the actual ROI on this, what is the strategy, or what do the strategies look like in terms of how do you get these products to actually, you know, put money back in the coffers?
Yeah, we're monetizing in basically every way that we monetize other types of things. So for instance, for something like a game, the game is living on our owned and operated properties, and we have programmatic ads that run either around it, or if it's a quiz or something, there's like a waiting screen waiting for a result, there might be a video ad that plays there. So we're monetizing the time spent and the scale from that sense. We also are creating custom AI products for advertising partners. So we had a chatbot for Sprite that you wrote about with Complex. And then we've done a few others. Tasty had a Tyson Chicken did a sponsored bot that was specifically looking for chicken recipes in a more engaging way. So some of them are very much built on the exact type of editorial thing that we've created. And some of them are totally new experiences where we're sort of acting more as consultants in a way, to say, we've been working on this AI stuff for a really long time. We understand how to build it quickly. We understand how to build it in a way that will be really engaging for your audience. So we're monetizing that skill. Mm. And then the last thing is that we're also monetizing through commerce. So actually today we launched our first commerce-powered shopping bot. It's a gift guide guide called the Shopee, what will help you sort of search all of the gift content on BuzzFeed in time for the holiday season. So it's similar to Botatouille in that it's really utilitarian. It's an experience where you can say, okay, I'm looking for a gift for a 12-year-old Taylor Swift fan. And then it will help you sort through all the things that we already have on BuzzFeed. And I think it's again, like a fun experience in addition to something that we think is really useful.
Mm-hmm. And just to reiterate, this is breaking news. This is the grand official launch of this product. Can you talk about, we'd spoken a bit about, this has actually been out in the public, but you hadn't announced it. You were kind of giving guides and takeaways from how it was performing and making some tweaks. I know it's very early days, but what were some of those initial insights that you got and thought, okay, let's tweak Shopee in this way or that way?
Yeah, it was very much the same as with Botatouille, where once people were in the chat, it was super highly engaged. We had a really high click-through rate to the affiliate links. We had a really high conversion rate for people once they found the thing. But it was really that we needed to understand, like, how do we make you see that, one, this thing is not an ad. We need to make it look really editorial and really engaging so that you're not just scrolling past this thing that might look like something that you don't want to play with. But then also say, from the beginning, like, what are you going to get from this? Make it very clear and intentional and label the function. And so that's kind of the thing that we've been tweaking over the past, sort of been soft launching for a couple of weeks and really trying to understand what that is.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd also said there was some internal debate as to, do we want to link out to products that BuzzFeed doesn't have in stock? Or, I mean, stock's the wrong word, but there is some element of what is it that we want to promote and how can we be most efficient about that? Or what do we want to refer to?
Right. I think trying to understand, like, how do we really provide this extra value? I think, you know, anyone can go to Google and just search a specific type of product. And that doesn't necessarily add value. So what we really wanted to do is let people search all the things that our editorial team had already vetted before and understood. But even though we have a huge volume, there's still a limitation to the number of products. So there's sort of a balance between, like, you might have a hyper specific request for something. I'm trying to remember, there have been some very specific requests in the gift bot already for things that we definitely haven't written about. But now we can have that data and say, okay, someone wants, I don't know, a turtle shaped backpack for their grandmother. And like, you can then go find that and put it into the database and find the best thing. So it's trying to balance, like, how do we reach the widest number of possible requests, but also make sure that we're only sending people the things that we actually know are good quality.
Well, and to your point, I would imagine that this eventually becomes a sort of treasure trove of what people are looking to buy for the holidays. So you're collecting data that I would imagine informs what you're going to stock in the future or write about in the future. Is that part of the appeal of a bot like this?
Totally. It's part of the appeal. We have like a separate sort of back-end like data map of all the different things people are asking for in the different quadrants of like price point and person that they're shopping for. And so that can then just also inform the regular editorial content that we're writing. So it's getting to like the amount of engagement in all of these really just provides so much additional data about how people are interacting with your content and what kinds of things they really do and don't want to see. And there's also some fun trolls.
Well, speaking of trolls, I want to go back to something you mentioned before, which was that Complex Sprite partnership on the, so I reported on this a few months ago. It was a branded partnership in which Complex created a chatbot that generated a custom album artwork based on the conversation that you had with it about your music interest. It was a standalone website. It was Sprite branded and sponsored. I remember I was speaking with the source when I was writing the story, and he said something like, how many people are really going to go to this separate landing page just to have this playful experience with the chatbot and get, you know, a piece of album artwork? So I am curious, with those kind of products, the standalone branded bots, you said that there was pretty good reception and that there might be more such projects in the pipeline, but what was the sort of advertiser feedback and you know, what did the results look like of that project?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak specifically for Sprite or the company, but it was, it's definitely a risk to make something more standalone versus having it live on somewhere like complex.com or something else. But I think because we wanted it to be like very clear that this was a different experience that you couldn't get, that was one of the reasons. Future products that we're building for advertisers might not all have that same function. They might, some of them might be embedded on one of the sites or other things as we're learning. But yeah, for that one, I can't share because I don't remember the total number of people that actually that went to the experience. But the engagement on that one was also pretty wild. I think there was something like it wasn't a game, but it was a open-ended chat, but that did have sort of an end at some point. And I think almost 40% of people got all the way to the end, and then another 20% of the people went back again to take it again. And then there was a huge number of people that actually downloaded the asset, like the album art that you got, which is really interesting because I don't know what necessarily people are doing. I'm sure they're sharing it in some way or another, but that it was people that were clicking the download button, which is pretty interesting because most of the way I think that people are sharing sort of digital assets are taking a screenshot on your phone. So we know that more people were probably sharing it, but there was like a huge number that were actually even clicking the download button that we created. So it's another scenario where like the engagement is what was important, not necessarily just the scale.
Gotcha. And I think we're wrapping up. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to introduce the QR code experience.
Yes, we do have a QR code. You can play Nepagachi. It's fun. it'll be an experience. I won't spoil anything else for you. If you don't know about Nepo babies, maybe Google that first before you get into it. And then also Shopee, if you want to test out our new shopping bot on the gift guide page. Those are both things that we're really excited about.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jess. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Yeah, That's Probably an Ad, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by me, Al Manarino, executive produced by Chris Ahrens and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGivney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcast. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.